Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Barb Pellow, and I'm a group director at InfoTrends. I'm delighted to welcome you to the live publication webinar, Books and Magazines, What Does the Future Hold?, sponsored by Canon Solutions America. I'll be your moderator today. Before we get started, though, I want to take a second to point out the Tips for Attendee widget on your console. It's the blue one with the wrench on it. If you missed the tips for the technical tips video that we played leading up to the webinar, you can always click on this wrench widget for more information. Now, let's get started. One of the big things that we're going to spend some time talking about is the fact that the future is changing when you think about books and magazines. Print still remains the number one source of revenue for most publishers, but what about future trends in the industry? Well, today I'm delighted to be joined by two industry experts, Lynn Terhune, Global Digital Print Manager and Strategic Sourcing and Procurement Manager at Wiley, and Amanda Jennison, Marketing Specialist at Bates Creative. And what we'll be doing today is talking about the status of printed communications, how ebook production, e-editions is impacting magazines and how they're maturing, the future of the industry and the role of things like mobile apps, current trends and upcoming distribution channels, and industry perspectives on how these changing market dynamics are going to impact businesses. What I'm going to do is spend just a few minutes talking about changing dynamics for publications. Lynn is going to focus on the book market and how books are being redefined. Amanda is going to talk about a cross-platform approach to publications with a special focus on the magazine side of the marketplace. We'll wrap up with some recommendations and conclusions, and I would also encourage everybody to key in questions throughout the webinar. We'll take them as they come in so that you can get your questions answered immediately. Let's start with how the market is defined today. First of all, when you think about publications, I tell everybody it's the act or the process of publishing matter in either print or, in today's market, electronic form. And what you've got is an issue or an electronic document like books, magazines, or newspapers that are offered for distribution or sale. What we're seeing is that books, magazines, newsletters and newspapers are all being redefined, and it's driven by technology. One of the things that we do at InfoTrends is we look at how pages are actually being produced. And from a print perspective, what happened was for a lot of the publication market, offset print dominated. What we're seeing is rapid growth in people migrating to on-demand technologies, very specifically for applications like books and magazines. And in fact, we look at the marketplace and we forecast it, and this is our projections between now and 2018. And what you'll see is in the book market, almost 40 billion pages move from traditional offset printing to digital print. You'll see the same thing in newspapers, where there'll be an increase of 11.8 billion devices produced on digital print devices. But there's more than that taking place in the market. Technology has changed the way that content is created, formatted, designed, stored, printed, digitized, distributed, and sold. As a result, what we're seeing are new content products that are being created. There are new channels emerging in the marketplace. And there are revenue shifts taking place among all the different formats. And these have virtually touched all participants in the publishing industry. It's authors, it's publishers, it's publishing service providers, printers, manufacturers, wholesalers, retailers, e-tailers, and the consumer. This next slide pretty much sums up the challenge. Publishers are unclear which technology will be preferred by consumers for consumption of content. As opposed to printing and inventorying everything, people are looking at what's going to be published electronically versus in print. And the expectations from a consumer perspective are changing. What they're looking for is communications that are interactive, that are participative experience, They want editions, whether they're newspapers or books or magazines, to be affordable, and they want them to be always available. Let me spend just a second talking about some statistics relative to what's going on in the marketplace. On an annual basis, the Book Industry Study Group, BISG, publishes data about the book market. In their most recent study, what they basically said was there are 60,000 publishers out there, 2.6 billion units produced, and the market is $27 billion in revenue. Basically, what's happened is large book publisher revenues are reflecting a new normal. Revenues have been roughly flat, while operating margins are up, and that's largely due to more books being consumed, but a lot of those books are e-books. And so that message is flat is the new up. When you take a look at the major segments in the book market, the trade sector, and that's consumer fiction and nonfiction, generated about $14.63 billion in revenue and $2.32 billion in terms of unit volume. The fastest growth sector is the adult nonfiction in the trade category. You're also seeing stability in terms of K through 12, higher ed, and professional and scholarly journals, and they've remained relatively flat. In terms of what's going on, based on format, what we're seeing is, if I look at the trade sector, e-books are growing at a rapid rate. But believe it or not, we still all love our paperback books, and that remains the number one format in the trade sector. The simple message inside of this for the book market is that while there's a decline or dollars are relatively flat, that doesn't equate to a decline in readership or, in fact, overall profitability. You are seeing the price of books go down, but unit volume is going up. You're also seeing the fact that in a number of sectors, print is critical to the mix. And what BISG did was they asked people what formats they preferred, predicated on the type of book. And what you find is that in a lot of the books that are reference-oriented, business-related, cookbooks, travel books, people still want print as a primary media. Now let's shift gears and talk for a minute about the magazine marketplace. The Magazine Publishers Association publishes their 2014 Magazine Media Factbook. One of the big things that's interesting is that consumers are increasingly engaging with magazine content. The overall audience for magazines has actually increased 10% between August of 2013 and August of 2014. Print and digital editions represented the prime channel, followed by the web, mobile web, and video. But I think one of the most important statistics that was published, and you have to think about this, is that 91% of adults read magazine media, and that number is 96% for those under the age of 25. When you look at 2013, there were 185 new print magazines launched, and it ranked number one in terms of advertising engagement. Another interesting statistic about magazines is that magazines, and you'll hear more about this from Amanda, are interactive. Believe it or not, 2013 saw a 246% increase in titles that use mobile activation in editorial. Mobile-activated magazine pages rose 54.9%, and QR codes still comprise the primary interactive vehicle, though I think we'll see over the course of the next several years increases in things like near-field communication tags and augmented reality. And last but not least, when you think about publications, newspapers are still a big business. Believe it or not, each day, more than half the world's adult population read a newspaper. 2.5 billion of those are in print, and another 800 million are in digital form. The newspaper industry generates more than $160 billion in revenue from content, sales, ad revenue, and increasingly, other forms of diversified revenue streams. Print is still a big portion of the revenue, and it accounts for 93% of newspaper revenues. The challenge for newspaper publishers is those revenue streams are changing, and they've seen a need to diversify. And what you're seeing is there's movement toward more digital ads. There's a lot of emphasis on specialty pubs, niche and non-daily publications, and other new revenue streams. The other big challenge for the newspaper industry is that when you look at ad revenue adjusted for inflation, it's a tough market to be in. And so that diversification and the ability to blend in new content forms is becoming critical in that market space. Now, that's just a quick snapshot of what's going on in the publication marketplace. What I'm going to do now is turn over to Lynn Terhune, and Lynn's going to share with you her perspectives relative to the dynamics and the changes that we're seeing in the book market. Lynn, take it away.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Barb. So thank you for joining us today. I'm Lynn Terhune, the Global Digital Print Manager for the Strategic Sourcing and Procurement Group here at Wiley. I'd like to give you an overview of Wiley and then move into some detail. I'm going to try to squeeze in loads of information in 20 minutes. So Wiley is a content company. We are in the business of knowledge. We have three business units: global research, professional development, and global education, and thousands of talented employees to support our businesses. Our fiscal year runs May 1st to April 30th, so we just finished up fiscal year 15 and are awaiting results. That's why I have fiscal year 14 information here. Our headquarters office is in Hoboken, New Jersey, and we have a lovely view of Manhattan. We also have offices and operations that span the globe. Excuse me. As you will see in my next few slides, we have a lot going on at Wiley and a rich history to draw from. I'd like to think that our past informs our future, and I think these are cool facts about Wiley. So if you would let me go through a couple of details. We were founded in 1807. The family has been involved with the company for seven generations. We published familiar authors like Herman Melville, Edgar Allan Poe, Hans Christian Andersen, Victor Hugo, Charles Dickens, Elizabeth Barrett Browning, to name a few. I think it's interesting that we switched our focus from literary interests in the mid-1800s to knowledge publishing, and that focus has continued through today's digital age. Our authors include more than 450 Nobel laureates, and in 2014, we had 9 Wiley authors receive this prestigious award. Here's a map of our offices and operations around the world. I'm always amazed when I look at the map and realize how many countries we have a presence in. So, from a publisher to a knowledge company, Wiley is transforming itself from a publisher of printed material into a knowledge company, a content company. We now offer services and solutions and online material, online training and certifications in human resources, for example. Again, we just completed our fiscal year 15, and the stats on this slide on the right-hand side are current.
Lynn, I do have a question for you. And it's an interesting one. How challenging was it to make that transformation from being a publisher into a knowledge company?
Well, the transformation is still going on, in my opinion, and it's been pretty painful. So switching from just books and journals to other types of products, and it's just been an upheaval of our whole business.
Okay. It's a major cultural change then as well, I would take it.
Yes. Okay. Very much so, yeah.
Great. Thanks.
So Wiley today, I mentioned our three business units, and here's a little more detail. We have a global research business unit with scientific, technical, medical, and scholarly works. We produce journals, books, databases, and Wiley Online Library as a research tool for academics. We have professional development with content in areas of business, technology, and learning. We offer books, solutions, and test prep. We also offer the Popular for Dummies series in our PD group. As an aside, a few years ago, we wrote customized versions of POD for Dummies as an in-house reference tool. And then with BISG, we also wrote Digital Printing for Dummies as an industry tool. Both now need to be updated, but they're fun projects to be involved with. We publish, in our global education group, we publish undergrad and postgrad content in areas of so many different areas, finance, business, technology, chemistry, culinary, hospitality, earth science, geography, math, statistics, physics, to name a few. Our growth in digital. So approximately 45% of Wiley revenue today comes from digital products and services. So more and more of our revenue is coming from digital. We still pull in a lot of revenue from books and journals. And I've mentioned some of the digital products and services already. Wiley Online Library, Wiley Plus. There's another HR training tool that I'll get into a little bit later from a company that we acquired called CrossKnowledge. But a lot of our revenue now comes from digital products and services where 3, 4, even 5 years ago we didn't have this kind of revenue.
Hey, Lynn, one of the things that came in from a question and answer perspective was clearly this revenue picture talks about your transformation to a knowledge and a content company. What was the driver behind making that shift in terms of business focus? Was it customer demand?
I'm not so sure it was all. It probably was partly customer demand, but as e-books came about and the industry was changing with digital products and services coming to the marketplace, it really, I think it was either do or die. We either, Wiley as a traditional publishing company, either was going to close its doors or be acquired or change. So I really think it was a must transition for the company.
And then the other question that came in on this slide was 45% is from digital products. Is the balance from printed publications then, Lynn?
Yes. Yep. Yep, okay. From books and journals.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Let me find my place again. Okay. So one area that I wanted to highlight from our professional development a business unit is our Talent Solutions Group. So we expect growth from online learning and training, double-digit growth. So a huge part of that growth will come from a company called CrossKnowledge. Wiley acquired CrossKnowledge about a year ago, last May, in fact, and they are a distance learning provider. They have thousands of training content items. Their customer base is over 5 million users in 100 countries, and they sell integrated solutions that answer specific HR questions, for example. So they cater to the HR market, and they might go into a company. Oops. Advance the slide. Sorry about that. They might go into an HR company and customize online training and certification, for example. And then the next slide. are a few case studies. So these are a few examples of how we serve our customers. Wiley has been a valued source of information for more than 200 years, as I explained earlier, and Wiley content products and services help researchers, students, educators, and professionals around the world meet their needs. And this slide is just a few examples within each of our business units. So moving on to detail about programs I'm directly involved with. So this slide just has some highlights of what we are trying to do in Global Education Custom and the rest of the Global Education Business Unit. I don't think it's a surprise that students still seem to prefer print. Nobody wants to highlight it or talk about it, but when I was getting ready for this presentation, speaking to the head of our Global Ed Custom project, she was saying we're still getting a lot of feedback that students want print. So we're trying to give our customers what they want. We are doing, in custom, we're doing bind-in access cards, partly to combat theft. And those bind-in access cards would be, you know, somewhere within the book, not so much, you know, on the back of the book. And we're pulling together e-content through something called e-mashups. So our custom print product is a combination of Wiley text, and it could have some professor information. We're trying to do the same to the e-content, and there's a huge push internally on this kind of digital customization like these e-mashups. We're also trying to do reflowable custom product. Some of our custom products are just paperback version of our binder-ready products, because the customer is asking for it. We also do Global Ed supplements. They are offered in E only and in POD only. So we don't print regular inventory. We don't hold it in a distribution center. We offer it in E only and POD only. We have this started up about a year ago. We have a digital advantage program for complimentary copies, and we're using variable digital printing technology to print the professor's name on the front cover. We offer standard custom titles built internally, and then we also have a custom select called Wiley Custom Select. So it's a custom book build site, and currently about 90% of that product is print. Since about 1996, I've been involved with digital printing at Wiley, and apologies for the acronyms. I'm so used to them. So SR is short run, and POD, print on demand. We're using technology to print smarter. We've created systems to micromanage inventory through homegrown system called GOI, another acronym, sorry, Global Optimal Inventory, that the inventory managers can manage their inventory through setting levels and then also ordering those inventory needs electronically. We're trying to be more flexible with moving our print content around through a print asset delivery system. Some people refer to that as a DAM or a digital asset management system, but we're trying to hold all of our content and all of the title-specific metadata with those assets and deliver that package directly to a print vendor. We have XML-based ordering for both our print-on-demand and short-run programs. And this fall, I was directly involved with this fall we completed our first XBITS PO transaction integration with a vendor, And then we also have four other vendors that are we're on XML-based ordering with. We're using these systems to create a global distribute and print program that distributes files globally to print to the local market. So in POD and short run, with these inventory management and ordering efficiencies, we're trying to realize a reduction in obsolescence, lower returns rates, lower distribution costs, especially on sea and air freight, an improvement in cash flow, and most importantly, persistent product availability for our customers in the market that they are. Here are a few short-run stats. I think this shows an industry trend. In short run, we can order close to 1,900 titles now electronically through our Global Optimal Inventory System. These printings have increased over 47% in the last year, so what we're seeing are more transactions but less units per order. And that trend has continued. The less units per order has continued to decrease. Some POD quick stats, so 18,000 active titles in POD today. And by POD, I mean that these titles are printed only after we receive an order and they are drop shipped directly to the customer in whatever quantity ordered. So it could be 1,000 units in an order or it could be a quantity of one. Our sales were flat last year, but for fiscal year 15, we manufactured about 860,000 books in POD globally, including third-party distribution business. And so what I mean by third-party distribution business are companies like Amazon Ingram and Baker & Taylor holding our files, and if they get an order, they print and ship on our behalf. So most of what I just talked about is current state. Moving on to the future, Barb, you mentioned a couple of these items. But when I was thinking about this presentation, I pulled together a list of just technology buzzwords, words that I've been hearing in the industry. And I'm starting to hear at Wiley and in other companies, we're starting to talk about how to best put these in use in our companies today. And not on this list, but I recently read an article from BookBiz Insight by Joe Weichert, who is a former Wiley publisher, by the way. He was talking about curation automation, which was really interesting. And I just read today about a company called or a program called Wattpad, and then also about ebooks offered on Southwest flights as in-flight entertainment. So possibilities are endless. There are lots of different things that we can do with content. So my predictions about the future, more of everything, more customization, more electronic and print complementary products, more print standardization. And we've done, Wiley, over the last few years, we've done some of this already by standardizing trim sizes and tech stocks to meet the digital equipment for titles starting out in digital print. I think we'll see more content scattering. And by this I mean that content will be printed and offered through the content company, so through Wiley, and at third-party companies through their print cells and at wholesalers in countries like China. And I think it's a given that we'll see more industry consolidation for publishers, print vendors, and digital services. And one future point that I think should be at the top of the list is continued migration from offset to digital equipment. So like on the inkjet presses, they're finally starting to mature, so I think we can only see more migration to the digital equipment.
Well, thanks, Lynn. We do have a couple more questions here. And the first thing that somebody asked, and I'm going to get your opinion, I'm going to weigh in with mine. Somebody asked, do we think that QR codes are going out of fashion? And I'm going to ask for your opinion, and then I will also weigh in with mine.
I'm not my company's expert on QR codes, so
okay.
Yeah.
Well, let me go through this. You know, one of the stats that I quoted, and it was from the Magazine Publishers Association, was from a magazine perspective, QR codes are being used, and when they looked at interactive elements, 60% of the magazine publishers were still using QR codes. The difference between QR codes and other forms of making print interactive is that if I'm using a QR code, I have to download an app to use it. Still fairly easy to do in most environments. We are, I think, and the other thing is it's phone type agnostic. I can get a QR code reader for any phone. We are seeing the emergence of a concept called near-field communications, which is like a RFID tag that you can stick into a into or onto a page. The challenge is that Apple, well, they've enabled the iPhone 6 with an NFC reader. Believe it or not, it's only being used and can only be used today for Apple Pay. I think that those interfaces will open up, which will get NFC tags more readily adopted. The last area is augmented reality. And I had one of my clients that I work with on a regular basis over at the London Book Fair, and he said augmented reality was all over the place at the London Book Fair. So I think what you're going to continue to see is people trying to, whether it's a magazine or a book, make those publications more and more and more interactive. At which point in time, I am going to turn it over to Amanda Jennison, and Amanda is going to talk to you about what Bates Creative is doing with a heavy emphasis on the magazine side of it and looking at what they're doing relative to repurposing content across multiple platforms. So with that, I will turn it over to Amanda. Amanda, take it away.
Thank you, Barb, and hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to join you today to discuss the future of publishing. And I'm specifically going to be talking about magazines across print and digital channels. So my name is Amanda Jennison. I'm the marketing specialist at Bates Creative. We're an integrated design agency located right outside of Washington, D.C. in Silver Spring, Maryland. And I'd like to start out by giving just a quick overview of our agency and how our firm has evolved over our 12 years in business. So Bates Creative was founded in 2003, and when we started, we were primarily a print design shop. And then when the economy started to take a downturn a few years into business, our president and founder, Debbie Bates, decided that our team should begin to take on digital service offerings to balance out the decline in print. So we expanded our team and our services, and we began to offer website design to our clients. Then when the iPad was rumored to be coming, we knew it was going to be huge for the industry. We spoke with one of our big clients, the U.S. Marine Corps, who gave us permission to play around with their flagship magazine that we were designing in print to see how we could make it work as a digital edition for the iPad. So that was the start of our agency's journey into digital publishing. And fast forward to today, almost 40% of our business is now coming in from digital projects, a close second behind the 47% that is coming in from print. So this is a reflection of the types of services our clients are now coming to us for, which I'll go into a little bit more detail further into the presentation. First, a little bit more about what we do at Bates Creative. We like to call ourselves storytellers by design. We work to really understand our clients' needs and their goals and the story their brand is trying to tell. We work to unwrap those stories and tell them across channels through design. This includes interactive medium, publication design, print collateral, and brand development. So with my objective and focus for today on the future of magazine publishing, I'm really going to focus on the trends that we're seeing at Bates Creative across print and digital publishing. And there's no question we're seeing a shift in the marketplace and with our clients, what their objectives are and what they're working to achieve. So I'm going to start off by going through some relevant statistics that I've come across that really speak to the shift that we're seeing in the marketplace and in our business. So this first chart is from Forrester Research, and it shows the rapid increase in tablet shipments and sales and how those compare to desktop shipments, which you can see is at a steady pace and really kind of inches toward a decline. So this year, we're seeing that tablet shipments have outnumbered desktop shipments and are forecasted to only continue to rise. So this next chart, it's showing a progression of adult tablet ownership. In January 2014, it was reported that 42% of adults in the U.S. own a tablet. And this really speaks to the influx of adult consumers in the marketplace who are purchasing these devices to use. And while this is a general representation, it's important to see how your readership compares with these statistics and how they're falling into these trends. I just want to make sure my slides are advancing, Barb.
You know, I'm right now, let me just check and see if I can move it forward. It was stuck. I think you're good now.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Okay. So this next chart is really, you know, taking a look at the consumers who are purchasing tablets. How are they using them in their day-to-day lives? So it's really important to see how they're using these devices once they purchase them. So in 2014, it was reported that the average person spends 86% of their time on mobile inside of applications versus 14% of that time spent on the mobile web. While this is a general look at consumers and their time spent on mobile, we tell our clients to really take an in-depth look at their audience and see how they're interacting with these devices. This will help you determine what the best digital option for your publication is, whether that's a mobile app, a responsive website, or a combination of both. And this next chart is similar to one that Barb shared a little bit earlier in the presentation, so I'll just quickly touch on this one. But this is also from MPA, and it's showing a shift in the audience mix that's represented. So as you can see, they're reporting a shift in its mobile web audience mix, which increased from 9% in August 2013 to 22% in just under 2 years. All right, so here I find this chart really, really interesting. It gives a great overview of the types of media that tablet owners are consuming. Specifically, these two charts I'm showing here represent iPad owners and then tablet owners as a whole. So what I find particularly interesting is the blue bar on the left of both charts, which are representing the top quintile of usage for magazines. While consumers are increasingly purchasing tablets and iPads, they are still very interested in reading magazines, and I feel this is a great representation of what we've seen in our business at Bates Creative and what our clients are coming to us to design across print and mobile device platforms because their audience is really still engaged in both mediums.
Hey, Amanda, I did just get a question for you. When you sit down and you say, okay, I'm still going to read a magazine, and I might do a print edition or I might look at it electronically. Are you seeing in the print editions a drive to do more what I'll categorize as segmentation or versions of magazines predicated on specific audiences?
Yeah, I'd say so. And I think a few of the case studies that I'm going to get to might answer that question. So
great. I'll hold off then. Thanks,
okay,
Amanda.
No. Sure. So what does this all mean? So it's clear that people are shifting toward consuming content on mobile devices, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're turning away from print publishing. It's all about understanding who your specific audience is and how they fit into these trends. So how do you gather this information from your audience? Before we start any project with a client at Bates Creative, we want to see the data, and oftentimes that comes from reader surveys. Ask your readers how they're consuming content, specifically their publications. Do they own tablets and use them in this way? How often do they read publications on the web? take the time to get to know your readers and then start strategizing about how you can deliver your publications and content to them across these channels. And at Bates Creative, we've really seen a shift in what our clients are asking us for. A few years ago, a client would come to us for a magazine redesign in print only. Now, a large percentage of the clients who are coming to us for their publications are looking for help to redesign them in a way that works across all channels, both print and digital. So our agency is a partner for Adobe's Digital Publishing Suite platform, and this is one option for publishing your content to mobile devices and the web. While it may not be the option for everybody, there are certainly other options out there as well, but DPS, we've seen, has become a leader in the marketplace and is a really powerful tool for publishing your content in this holistic way. So I'm just going to give a brief overview of DPS for those who might not be aware of it, and then I'm going to move on to the case studies that I mentioned and share how some of our clients are leveraging both print and digital to meet their audience's specific needs and their business goals. So one of the first things that attracted our agency to Adobe DPS is that it's a familiar tool set. The DPS tools are built into InDesign, which makes it really easy for designers and publishers to get to know how to add in the fun, interactive elements to their publications. An added benefit is that you can also push content from the web to your DPS app. So if you have your publication living on a website, you can push this content to your app through APIs that are available, and then have this publication content accessible offline through your app. With an Adobe DPS license, once you create your content in your app, you can deploy it to the major app stores, Google Play, the Apple App Store, and then your readers can download and engage with your app and your content. There's also a back-end analytics dashboard for Adobe DPS license owners, so you can see how your audience is interacting with your content and then continue to adapt and evolve your publication to meet their needs. And I'm going to get into some of the really fun stuff that I like to share. This first case study is for the American College of Radiology. And, you know, as I mentioned, we're seeing our clients coming to us to help them with both print and digital. So this is one first example for ACR's publication, ACR Bulletin, which is a monthly magazine that's sent to 30,000 members across the country. And in late 2013, ACR was ready to revamp the magazine, which is an informative source for members, but they wanted to have a more exciting look. So they wanted this magazine, they wanted to reposition this magazine to serve as a stimulus for ideas and communication among members and to challenge them in their thinking about their practice. So here's a quick slide that shows the print magazine before and then after the redesign. And then here's the new digital edition. So prior to us completing the redesign, ACR was publishing this magazine using a popular off-the-shelf split page solution, but they weren't seeing much traction or engagement from members. So they wanted this redesign to really be a springboard for a more innovative digital solution. So they leveraged Adobe DPS and we relaunched the digital edition as an interactive app for tablets and smartphones. Based on their membership, ACR decided to deploy this app to iPads, iPhones, and Android tablets. But something I'd specifically like to point out about this client's project is they really strategized about how to make this relaunch a success. They spent a lot of time putting together a marketing plan to announce the new mobile app for members. And you've probably heard this before, but I'm going to say it again. Just because you build an awesome interactive digital edition doesn't mean people are going to download it. You really need to spend time planning how you can market the new digital edition and use your print publication as a main driver for this. So here are a few images that we captured from the print edition where you'll see ACR has really put effort into getting members to go ahead and download the digital app as well. So they had us design a cover wrap for the first issue that would be available in the mobile app. And not only does the cover wrap, which you'll see on the left of the screen, not only does it provide, you know, a snapshot of showing that the app is available, but it also gives a quick start user guide for members to see how they can interact with the app. They also decided to leverage extended content that would be exclusive to only the digital edition. So within the print edition, ACR calls out the articles where more content or media is available in the mobile app, So this is another driving factor to get your members to download and explore the app. And they've really, you know, created this holistic experience for their members across both channels. So this next case study I'd like to share is a newly launched project that we just completed for NBAA, which is the National Business Aviation Association. And what was different about this project is NBAA initially came to us to launch their current magazine as a digital edition with DPS. However, after exploring all of the options and ways to enhance the magazine in the digital space, they decided that they wanted to redesign the print edition as well and completely relaunch the magazine for members. So here's a quick look at the print edition before and after the redesign. And similar to ACR, NBAA had a flip page solution for its digital edition, but they really wanted to enhance this experience for members and get them to really interact with the content inside the mobile app. So here's the launch issue that's available on iPads and Android tablets. And then this is a slide that explains a custom storefront. So NBAA decided to leverage this really great benefit that comes with Adobe DPS, which is a custom storefront. What that is it's the first screen a user sees when they open your app. And it really serves as a communication portal to all of your content. So the NBA storefront that you see here was launched with two screens. The first screen on the left is a gateway into the magazine. It's completely customized to fit the NBAA and Business Aviation Insider brand. And as more issues become available, they will fill the bottom of the screen that you'll see in that white space for its users to download and access the new issues of the magazine. The second screen on the right is a portal to additional resources. So if you take a look at the top left of the iPad screens, if you can see there, it gives an option to sign in. So this is for organization members to log in and gain access to even more content that is exclusive to members. What you see here are the resources that are available to the public. So if the user does not sign in, this is the resources they'll be shown. So this is a way for the organization to entice prospective new members to join or to explore what's available if they do join and become a member of NBAA. So it's also important to note that these resources on the second screen were not created with DPS. These include PDFs, white papers, live web links to drive users to the website. So when you think about how you can leverage a storefront like this in your app, the possibilities really are endless. And NBAA came out of the gate strong with the launch of their publication and the app and really used it as a tool to engage their audience. So this next case study is Heifer International. And this was one of our first clients for Adobe DPS. They came to us to launch their flagship publication, World Arc, as a tablet app. And the main goal for Heifer International was to reach new donors and to share its mission with the world, which they couldn't previously do due to the high cost of shipping the printed magazine internationally. So this was a way for them to get their content out to other countries who couldn't receive the print magazine. Since the World Arc tablet app launched in 2013, the magazine has been downloaded and read in more than 20 countries. So I don't have an image of it here, but Heifer also decided to integrate its gift catalog into the digital edition of the magazine. So this enables them to reach thousands of potential new donors through the magazine app and to increase the donations that they're getting from other countries around the world. And this last case study I'm going to share is for the American Society of Mechanical Engineers. And this was a brand new launch magazine. So ASME has members all over the world who are dedicated to working on projects to help meet the needs of individuals and organizations at the intersection of technology and global development. And ASME really wanted to launch this new publication to showcase these case studies of members working around the world. To deploy the new magazine, ASME decided to have it printed in poly bags with its monthly magazine to be sent to members inside the United States. And then in addition to printing the magazine, ASME launched a digital edition with Adobe DPS, giving the organization an opportunity to reach a wider audience. So so that members and volunteers who are working in other countries could also gain access to the content. And as you see in this slide, the App Edition is also available as a web viewer for those members who don't have a tablet to explore the app online on their desktop or laptop. And all of the functionality of the app is still there. It's just accessed with a click of a mouse rather than a tap or a swipe. So these four examples kind of show a range of ways that organizations and our clients are publishing their content and leveraging both their print and digital editions to meet the needs of readers in their business. So I hope that kind of answered the question that came in.
Yeah, my question, Amanda, and that was, I just wanted to kind of go through this, is when you take a look at the breakdown of the communication, you're doing a print and you're doing a digital edition. What percentage in your mind, and I'm sure it varies by publication, is it what percentage typically of the readership would look at the digital versus the print publication, and what's the uptake on the digital versus print?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question, and it definitely does vary by audience and by the organization. So, you know, what we really tell our clients is to take a look at their audience base and figure out, you know, how they're accessing their content. So I really don't have a straight answer because it's going to vary across industries. But, you know, so if someone wants to know about a particular organization or client, I could get back to them on those numbers offline at some point.
And then one of the other things that I'm curious about is obviously these tool sets give you the ability to incorporate rich media and the ability to link mm-hmm. to video and those kinds of things. Of the publications you're doing, how frequently are the publishers blending into that experience the ability to link into interactive media?
Sure. It's definitely, you know, often. And typically we like to, before we start working on a digital edition of a magazine, we'll take all of the content that they have, whether that comes from a print magazine or it's a mix of web content and their print magazine, and we thumbnail it out. And it's good to space out the interactive elements. We'd like to say, you know, a few videos within your app is good, but you want to make sure that the file size doesn't exceed, I think, 300 megabytes per file, because mm-hmm. then the download time is going to take too long, and users are going to abandon it before they even get to the content. So while interactivity is awesome, and we're seeing that, you know, it really the interactivity and analytics is what wins and what keeps your users engaged and coming back, you don't want to overwhelm them with too many elements because it'll get confusing or too complex. So it's really about thinking about your content and planning out where those elements are going to live.
And could you just articulate again, what kind of analytics do you give back to the customers?
Sure. So with Adobe DPS, when you purchase a license, you get access to a dashboard. So you log in and you get, it goes down to you know, really good details. So you can see the length, how long someone watched a video. You can see how many times they read a particular article, how much time was spent inside of the magazine or that particular issue. And then, you know, there's also some other great things. So you can send push notifications to a user, and you can see who's opened that push notification and then been directed to your app. So, you know, it's really great. And you can even purchase a higher level of analytics that shows you even more detail. But that's, you know, the baseline of what you get with the standard license.
Great. Thanks, Amanda.
It's very similar. I like to say it's pretty similar to Google Analytics for your website.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Yeah, so I just wanted to touch quickly on how advertising can play into this and your strategy for print and digital. So we often hear questions from our clients who are wondering how to focus their efforts on digital publishing without losing their valued advertisers and sponsors in print. And it's a valid concern, but current research is showing us that this digital shift can actually help publishers reach their advertising goals. So a critical step when you consider the options for ads in your digital edition is to ensure that you're educating your print advertisers about what this move means and the new opportunities it presents them. We encourage our clients who have ads in their publications to shift their mindset and explore creating new tiers or levels of advertising options to offer their advertisers. So this is one excellent example that we love at Bates Creative, and it's a Sonos ad that we saw in Wired magazine. And so this slide and the next one just show a quick progression of how the interactive advertisement works, which is much cooler when you actually see it live on your tablet. But the ad starts out by just showing three rooms with three different Sonos products visible. When the user taps the screen, a smartphone slides up, and it prompts the user to engage with the ad. And as you see through following the prompts, it shows you how the Sonos products actually work and fills the different rooms with color and music. So the ad is visual and has audio included, and through each stage of the ad, the user can choose to click through to the Sonos website to learn more about the products. So this is a really sophisticated example of how interactive advertising can play into your digital edition, but when you take the elements from this ad as inspiration, you can provide advertisers options to include video, audio clips, or simple hyperlinks to enhance their print ads for your digital edition. And don't forget that with, you know, Adobe DPS, so all of the analytics, as I just said, are being tracked. So the analytics for all of the advertisements that you would have is tracked as well, so you can report all of those back to your advertisers. And then just to wrap up, a few tips to move forward. As you think about what this means for your business and your publications, it's all about really being ready to adapt. Pay attention to the market shifts and how that is potentially a reflection of your readership base, and be agile to respond to these shifts and your audience's needs. And what we like to say at Bates Creative, you know, always strive to amaze your readers with your publication. Keep them coming back for more. We like to say create an experience under glass for your digital audience and really wow them with your digital edition, and don't forget to market it. And that's about all I have. So, you know, thank you for having me. We do have an app in the App Store if anyone's interested in learning more about Bates Creative and our services. And I'm happy to continue the conversation offline as well.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Amanda. I'm going to wrap up with just a final couple of comments. And I want to thank, first of all, both Lynn and Amanda for sharing their stories. I think there's a couple major components that you need to think about. And what Lynn is really saying is, what they've done is they've migrated to a world where they've eliminated warehouses and they've got a virtual document repository where they can do everything that their clients need just in time and on time and provide content the way that the customer wants it. I think when you listened to Amanda, you heard that print isn't going away, but you really need to think about your audience, and you need to think about the role that mobile is going to play. She talked about using the Adobe Digital Publishing Suite, but there's a number of tools out there in addition to that, like Bluetoad, GT Excel, Issue, a number of them that will help you in terms of making that migration, by the way, for both magazines and books. What I also think you're going to see is that engagement will become more and more important in terms of books and magazines. One of the examples I've got in this slide is an example from the London Book Fair where somebody was talking about a book on science, and they could actually, by using augmented reality, make a volcano come to life. I would also tell you that custom content and shorter runs will continue to play a bigger and bigger role in the market. Again, regardless of the type of publications you're dealing with. And in some instances, quite honestly, we're even seeing it driven down to an audience of one. And last but not least, Amanda talked about the fact that they do a lot of work in terms of analyzing how somebody actually looks at a publication. And what you want to look at when you deal with those mobile editions is, I want to be able to communicate the value, both if it's an ad or an article or a video, and leverage and provide your customers with good analytics. With that, I would like to thank everybody for their time and attention. And again, if you'd like to fill out a survey, we'd be delighted if you do that for us. You can see the survey link. And again, thanks everybody for your time and attention, and a special thanks to both Lynn and Amanda. Have a great rest of the day.